This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
What a play!
Can you believe this?
No, I can't.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Off to the races, and he stays on his feet.
This is going to go the distance.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
Well, howdy, everybody. Welcome to the show, Fantasy Football Today, your holiday edition. I don't know how long I can keep this stupid hat on because it's messing with my headphones, but it's 4th of July, almost. It's 2nd of July. It's our last show before the 4th of July. We have an awesome topic for you. It's called Red, White, and Boom! And Jacob Gibbs is here. And Jacob, we had an email sent around, said, hey, everybody, tomorrow's topic, Red, White, and Boom. Who are your players? And you wrote Red, White, and Blue. So you need to honor the topic, Jacob, or you're out.
Sorry about that. Wow. Yeah, I definitely do not have the commitment to the bit that you do. Respect.
I told Thomas I had a hat for the occasion. I got it at Party City like 8 years ago, and I wear it every 4th of July. Oh, what's up, Dave?
Looks like the kind of hat that a 50-year-old woman with liposuction would wear.
Why liposuction?
Just, you know, that plastic surgery type of profile.
Okay.
And I don't think someone with, you know, I don't know. I'm thinking of is like, you know, the woman that's got the big lips. That's not even liposuction.
Okay, Dave,
you
know,
lots just of plastic surgery.
You need to really stop, Dave.
Stop.
That's what it looks like.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Andy and Sick.
Dave nailed it. Okay. Yeah,
it
Dave.
Did.
Entirely inappropriate.
Starting the show with a boom.
Someone says, fireworks are a waste of money. I'll remind you, where I grew up in Florida, you can go to a store. Do they still have Neptune?
Yes.
It's like going to Walmart for fireworks, and you can buy industrial-strength fireworks, basically. It's insane. It is insane. I don't know how it's still around, but it's insane.
There's fireworks for sale at the Publix around the corner.
Mm-hmm. You like can buy them from a guy on the Publix corner. In a tent.
But like they go up in the sky and they go.
Yeah, they go up in the sky and they go. That's what fireworks do.
Well, not all of them.
That's what four-year-olds say they do.
Did you know that fireworks are illegal in Hawaii? I found that out yesterday from my girlfriend.
Well, like illegal for you and me to purchase or illegal for
I just don't think they sell them. I think you have to bring them in.
I don't think they can sell them in New York, but I could be wrong. All right, anyway. Red, here's the explainer for today's show. Red, white, and boom. Red means pump the brakes. This is a player we're avoiding at cost. We're using Fantasy Pros ADP, PPR. White, fair ADP. You're going to draft this player if he falls to you. And boom, light the fuse. A player you think is going to smash expectations and could win you leagues. So red, white, and boom. Red, pump the brakes too early. White, ADP is fair. Boom, we think he's going to hit, smash expectations. I'm not going to yell boom every time. All right.
I think you should.
Let's get started with Dave's red, white, and boom. Just run through who they are real quick.
Red, Breece Hall. White, Parker Washington. And boom! Harold Fannin Jr.
Let's go.
Breece Hall, 30th overall, RB14. Parker Washington, that's the white selection. 66th overall, wide receiver, 32. And boom, Harold Fannin Jr., 95th overall, tight end, 8. All right, go ahead. Kick it off with Breece Hall.
Well, we already saw it last year. He averaged 17.4 touches per game, 3 targets per game, averaged 13 PPR points per game. And now we're just expecting everything to be cool. His ADP on Fantasy Pros is 28th. It's 30th in our fantasy FFT fans only ADP. This is a round 3 pick for a guy who wasn't good last year. The coaching staff changed. They have a new play caller. He's detrimental to Breece Hall. Frank Reich is the guy. He has habitually used multiple running backs. He's only had a running back get over 15 PPR points per game 3 times in 10 years as a play caller. If you lower that to 13, okay, great. It's 4 times in 10 years. This offense isn't going to be any – I don't think it'll be much better with Geno Smith at quarterback. You can talk about the offensive line all day long. I still think they're not going to score a lot of points. I don't like that he had a bunch of touches last year and didn't do well. Now he's going to get a bunch of touches this year and do better. Why? I don't get it. And I will even say this. He will start the season well. Takes on Tennessee in week one. The schedule the first half of the year isn't really that bad. But in the second half of the year, this guy is going to cost you some fantasy weeks. He's not going to be that good. I don't think he's worth a pick in round three. I think he's worth a pick in round five.
Ooh, round five. All right, so that's Breece Hall as pump the brakes. Let me just ask Heath and Jacob, do you disagree with any of these selections? Breece Hall as the red, white, Parker Washington, boom, Harold Fannin Jr.
I disagree with everything.
Really?
Wow. Let's go.
Terrible list.
No, I don't think I disagree with it. I don't have a strong opinion on Parker Washington, so I guess white fits perfectly. It's just kind of a shoulder shrug emoji for me on Parker Washington as of right now. I think it's saying it's a little bit inaccurate maybe to say Breece Hall got a lot of touches last year and didn't do well. Like, he was at 13.2 fantasy points per game. That's pick 30. What's that? Probably RB15.
Well, last year he was RB 21 per game.
No, I'm saying this, where he's being drafted right now.
Yeah. Pick 30, RB 14.
RB 14. So, like, yeah, he's always had a hard time scoring touchdowns, but the two seasons prior to this, it was 9 and 8. Last year, it was 5 on more touches. I think we probably see him more involved in the passing game if Braylon Allen stays healthy, because Braylon Allen maybe takes a little bit off of his plate in terms of rushing, and then Isaiah Davis doesn't have to take some of the passing downs because Hull's being used so much as a rusher. He's a guy who has shown us an insane ability in the passing game, 6.6 yards per target for his career, 7.3 last year. Maybe they're just so dumb that they're going to say, no, we really shouldn't throw it to Breece Hall more than 48 times in 16 games. But I don't really believe that. I think it was just the roles got swapped a little bit when Allen went down and he had to play a portion of the year with Justin Fields, who doesn't really throw to running backs a lot. I have him ranked pretty much exactly where he's being drafted. He would have been white for me.
Okay.
I might actually be lower on Hall than Dave. I've got him at running back 22. So him and DeAndre Swift are basically just flipped for me. It looks like consensus has Breece around running back 16 and Swift at running back 22. I have Swift at running back 16. I think that Breece probably finishes higher than running back 22. I think the stuff Heath said there makes sense. Him and Travis Etienne are two players who I view similarly, where I'm just not drafting them very much because I think that their upside is pretty limited. And I end up gravitating more towards a bit of a riskier pick, whether that's Bashaul Tuten or maybe somebody like Cam Scataboo, who I think have more upside. I've got a tough time getting there with Breece Hall in this offense.
Just for the record, since we're looking at career numbers, Geno is a career running back target rate of 17.6%. Certainly more of a downfield thrower than a check down guy. I think that hurts all the running backs in New York. And I think Isaiah Davis is going to be the passing downs back for the Jets. He was for a big chunk of last year. It is absolutely the tendency of Frank Reich to use multiple running backs, one on running downs, one on passing downs. And now Aaron Glenn wants him to use Braylon Allen as well. Could you imagine if Breece Hall is a trap back? And that they use Allen, who's bigger and more physical than Breece Hall, at the goal line, and they use Isaiah Davis on passing downs, and he's the one that's getting 2.5 targets per game, and Breece Hall isn't. It's coaching malpractice. And I agree with Heath that Breece Hall is absolutely talented. He's awesome as a pass catcher, but the coaching staff needs to like get hit upside the head and say, listen, man, you've got this talent you just paid. Use him. And so far, they are telegraphing that they are not going to make him a workhorse. They are not going to give him the type of work that a feature back has, except he kind of already had that last year, and he let us down. And if I'm drafting somebody in round three with the idea that they're going to get me 13 PPR points per game, I think I'm drafting wrong. I'm looking for upside to do a lot better than 13 PPR points per game in round three.
Okay.
Also, just to the Braylon Allen point, the first 4 weeks, I think it was when Braylon Allen was healthy, he was averaging about 13 rush attempts and 5 targets per game. After Braylon Allen got hurt, the rush attempts went up to 16 per game. He fell down to 2 targets per game.
So let's talk about Parker Washington and or Harold Fannin Jr. Dave, why is Harold Fannin Jr. your boom play?
Harold Fannin is a boom because he was awesome last year. And even though the Browns drafted two wide receivers in the top 40, I don't think it's going to really pull too many targets away from him. 11.7 PPR points per game on 6.7 targets per game. He really showed last year. And Heath was first to talk about this with Harold Fannin, which is why I'm surprised that Heath is so low on Harold Fannin. He's really athletic. And he proved it in college. He had the opportunity to do it early on in the year when David Njoku was healthy for the Browns, and he really never let up on that role. Now you're telling me that, and I love Casey Concepcion, but you're telling me that Casey Concepcion and Denzel Boston are going to completely suck away targets from Harold Fannin and leave Fannin with four targets per game? I don't think that that's likely at all. Deshaun Watson has a career target rate to tight ends of 20.2%. It's actually 23.4% in his 2 years in Cleveland. If he's the guy, I don't mind him looking for Harold Fannin, who probably knows exactly where he needs to be and can do something with the ball after the catch time and time again. And Todd Monken's track record with tight ends is actually really good. You go back to 2024 and 2025 with Baltimore, 30.2% tight end target rate under Todd Monken. It was 23.1% in 2023. Earlier than that in his career, it wasn't as good, but I think Monken has realized, especially for a quarterback that might need to be eased in to NFL action, or in the case of Shedeur Sanders, a quarterback that's still working to find his way, that a tight end can be his best friend in the middle of the field, and he's got a great one in Harold Fannin. I see his ADP. This really baffled me. On Fantasy Pros, his ADP is 103rd overall. That's an amazing value for somebody who could finish as a top five tight end.
I got him at 95th overall.
That's still really good. I would take him round six in full PPR.
Yeah, tight end ADP is interesting on Fantasy Pros. It's like tight end six is Kyle Pitts at 92. Tight end seven is Laporta at 95. Tight end eight is Fannin also at 95. So tight end five is Kraft at 82. So it's a long wait after Warren at 64, and then it's like Kraft 82, and then you get into the mid-90s with Laporta, Fannin, and Pitts, Laporta, and Fannin.
I love that value for all those guys.
Yeah.
So I thought I would be white on Fannin. I thought I was right in line, but at that range, I'm definitely comfortable taking a shot on Fannin. There are so many reasons to be concerned, obviously, about the Browns of it all, and then if you want, you know, the new pass catchers coming in might affect him. We might see some different types of personnel packages where he gets less playing time than last year. But at that range, it's pretty much just upside. And why I'm comfortable taking him is I really think he could be a special player. My favorite stat on Fannin, there's so many amazing stats that are just like, this guy looks like he could be historically good, is he tied Christian McCaffrey, rookie season Christian McCaffrey, for the most receptions with more than 5 yards gained after initial contact with a defender for any player under the age of 22 dating back to 2015. So that's 11 years of data that we have available there. Fannin and CMC tied at the very top above rookie season Jamar Chase, above rookie season Saquon Barkley in terms of gains of 5 or more yards after initial contact. He's always fighting for more yards. He's so good, man.
Yeah, you mentioned the Deshaun Watson thing and him throwing to his tight ends, but it is worth noting, like, David Njoku was pretty horrible when Deshaun Watson was the quarterback. I mean, in 3 years, 387 routes, David Njoku averaged 1.22 yards per route run with Deshaun Watson.
That was one of the things, is like Watson's tight end target rate looks okay in the league context and looks pretty miserable in the Stefanski context. He was kind of the one quarterback under Stefanski that did not elevate tight ends. And so I think part of it is I'm trying to be a little bit consistent in that if I think that Kevin Stefanski and Drew Petzig matter for Sam Laporta and Kyle Pitts, then I have to think that losing them matters a little bit for Trey McBride and Harold Fannin. I do think Concepcion and Boston make this receiving core, especially if Deshaun Watson's the quarterback, more appealing for quarterbacks to throw to. If Shedeur wins this job in camp, then I'm going to give Fannin a boost because they've got that connection already. Shedeur threw it to him 33% of the time last year. I do agree with everything Jacob said, obviously. I love Harold Fant in the play.
That's what I was like, bro, it's FOE. I feel like we're overthinking this. He's literally just like by far the most talented player that you can get after pick 100. Like, it's not who's even in that conversation.
I don't have a problem with
Casey Concepcion.
I mean, I'm not sure I see Patrick Mahomes is going around pick 100.
I'm not sure I see the boom. Is what I was saying. Like, I think I probably would have had Harold Fannin as a white also.
All right. We got to take a break and then we can talk about Parker Washington, or we can move on to Heath's red, white, and boom. And we'll be right back. And also, I see some people talking about soccer in the chat. You know, soccer, you were doing so well. You were doing so well. And then every time, you know, you just remind us of something within you that is so stupid. Idiot soccer. We'll be right back on Fantasy Football Today. You know, we watch... I'm not going to ever call you football. If you want me to think about calling you football, then you need to man up and watch actual football where guys are beating the crap out of each other and maybe getting a penalty, but not getting kicked out of a game and not able to be replaced and then suspended for the next game because they accidentally stepped on someone's ankle. Are you kidding me? Like, the whole red card thing is so punitive and so unfair. You want to kick a guy out of a game? Fine. Let them replace the guy. Playing 10 on 11 is such a stupid rule. It just changes the game so drastically. And if that's going to be the end result, and it's not like I just learned this yesterday, by the way. I knew the red card rule. But if that's going to be the end result, you better really do something bad to get a red card.
Yeah.
And he did not do anything even close to something that would warrant getting kicked out of the game, not being able to be replaced for the rest of the game, and being suspended for at least one more game in what is now one of the most important games in U.S. soccer history, and they don't have arguably their best player because he accidentally stepped on someone's ankle. What a joke. You are soccer. You are not football. Football is a real man's game.
Wow.
USA.
Said by a man wearing a red, white, and blue star cowboy hat.
I think that's kind of the argument from football fans, though, is that you guys just should have chosen a different name because you created something different from our sport. You're right. They're not the same thing. But yep. It's not like soccer's trying to call themselves football because of what football is and they want to be like that.
No.
Soccer already was football.
The wrong part of the argument here. Forget about the football semantics. That was so weak and so lame.
It was a terrible call by the referee who I would imagine he would try and take it back or at least think about taking it back.
He didn't make the call. It was the video. It was the review guy.
That's the person who would probably wish they could take it back.
I just don't. I mean, I'm not a soccer guy. None of us are. But I do think that, like, there's stepping with your cleats on the player's Achilles nowhere close to the ball while challenging is quite often a red card.
Yeah, but like, you know, use your judgment. He obviously didn't do it on purpose. They were battling for position and he just came down that way. And also, I just don't, I do not understand the concept of not letting them replace the player.
Oh, I thought the 10v11 was like what made that game so great.
No.
Like, it was going to be a really boring second half. And then all of a sudden, it's like, oh, it might actually be a game.
It's a dumb rule.
Could you imagine that in the NFL?
In any sport.
Yeah.
It's insane.
It can happen in basketball, I think, if you have too many people foul out.
Okay.
It happened in Hoosiers.
Oh, they had six guys on their team.
My four are on the floor.
My four on the floor. That's
and great. I think he had a guy he could have played.
Yeah, he was disciplining his own player by not allowing him to come back in. Very different scenario here. All right. Sorry. In order for this show to move on here, anybody with a strong opinion on... Nobody agrees with Heath. Get out of here. By the way, I have some video evidence today of an NFL player strongly disagreeing with Heath that we're going to show later on.
Do they know what I said?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Anyway, that's, Parker
that's
Washington.
Fun.
Yeah, let's go over to Heath's. Let's go over to Heath's Red, White, and Boom here. We'll talk about Parker Washington on a different show. I'm sorry about that. Heath, who do you have as
10 minutes on soccer, 0 minutes on Parker Washington?
Who do you have? It's topical. Who do you have as Red, White, and Boom?
So I went with a round five theme. Chose three players from the same round for a Red, White, and Boom. My red, it will surprise no one, it's Mike Evans. I'm at 54th overall, I believe. Although I'm not sure because you also put 54th overall for Quinshon Judkins, and I don't think they're being picked with the same pick.
They are Quinshon Judkins 53.5 and 54.
Okay. Quinshon Judkins is my Boom at RB23 and 54 overall. And Roma Dunze is my White at 58th overall.
Okay, so Evans too early, Roma Dunze just right, Quinshon Judkins, boom, great value, could smash expectations. Yeah, do we have these screenshots here of, all right, listen, I want to show you Mike Evans running some routes. Last game of the year, okay? Look how open he's getting, and he knows you're dogging him. So he's going.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, he knows, man. Look, it's in the, these are quotes. I didn't make these up. He says, sup, Heath? I'm wide open. Look at me just abusing this guy for a 13-yard gain. Okay, let's get to the next screenshot. Look how open he gets a pass interference on him, and he still beats the guy for a big game. And he knew, because no way tomato is your favorite fruit, Heath. That makes no sense. He knows your terrible takes, Heath.
Okay.
All right, so he's open here. Same game. How do you like me now, Heath? This is just screenshots of Mike Evans getting open, still being good. Baker Mayfield threw an interception on this play, by the way. So this was just, you know, me having a little fun. But Evans,
I believe he was wide receiver one in fantasy point status charting for separation last year.
Wow. Yeah, well, and they saw the quotes too. They know what's up. But anyway, go ahead. So, Jacob and Dave, what do you strongly agree or disagree with here? Pump the brakes on Mike Evans, just right for Romo Dunze. Boom pick for Quinshon Judkins. They're all going around 55th overall.
I strongly disagree on Evans. He's one of a handful of receivers who I have like way above consensus among my top 30, with Parker Washington being one of the others too. So Fantasy Pros shows you like plus or minus relative to consensus. They're both plus five. I've got Evans at wide receiver 20. I think that, you know, obviously the upside is clear with Kyle Shanahan, but if you want more detail on that, Dan Schneier and I did about a 15-minute breakdown on Beyond the Box Score, like an individual video on Evans that goes into all the historical context and just how good it could be.
Dave, anything from you?
I just don't love the fact that a 33-year-old receiver with a history of hamstring issues is now going to be relied upon in this 49ers offense to stay healthy. I think he's a great fit for that offense based on his route running. You're banking on him having a bounce back year. He had one game all year with 15 plus PPR in 2025. So I'm really hoping that he can step up in a major way and stay on the field and be that number one alpha for the 49ers. They haven't had that guy at wide receiver in a while, unless there's somebody I'm just totally blanking on who's been that guy for them.
Dave, where do you think Baker Mayfield ranked on catchable target rate out of 39 qualified quarterbacks on throws of 10 or more air yards last year?
Probably dead last. Beat to hell.
Shedeur Sanders was dead last.
Oh, you know what? That makes sense. So he was probably
34th. 34th.
Okay. That's, you know, I didn't expect Baker to be good. Also, how many of those games? It doesn't even matter. Who the hell cares how many games Evans played? I think everybody knows what the red flags are with him. And taking him, I'm a little behind ADP on Evans, just because I don't want to spend a top 50-ish pick on somebody who I might have for 11 or fewer games, and who might not see even like any improvement in target volume in San Francisco. So he might fit into the offense great, but he might also only give us five games next year of like 14 plus PPR. I guess, no, that's not even okay. I'm not okay with that in round five.
I was going to pick Romo Dunze as well, Heath, as the white suggestion here, the just right ADP. And I need there to be enough separation between him and Luther Burden to justify passing on Luther Burden. And I think it's probably about 15 picks or so. It's getting close. Yeah, obviously the whole foot thing is concerning. You said he's the new normal for him is the bones in his foot have shifted, and he just has to kind of get used to it. But wide receiver 29 for Romo Odunze, who just got off to a brilliant start last year and had a, I think it was a 23% target share in his first 12 games. So yeah, anyway, discuss.
Yeah, I think for Rome, this just feels like the good middle point between this guy with very good pedigree, a very good offensive system, and a huge target opportunity, and also this guy who, if maybe it was just like he got hurt, obviously, but the things kind of went downhill before he got hurt last year. And honestly, his first 2 years in the league, if you just look at it in a vacuum, it's a pretty miserable start. He's just not been what we were hoping he would be. He and Caleb cannot get on the same page. He's barely caught half of his targets in his first 2 years in the league. And some of that's not his fault. Some of it's Caleb's fault because Caleb kind of sprays the ball a little bit. But still, Caleb Williams also has great pedigree, could take a leap at any moment. And Rome Odunze could be his number one wide receiver. So this is kind of that there's a low floor. There's a high ceiling. Round five feels right about right.
I think what's something that people might forget, including myself, is that, you know, look at the first 12 games of the year. Odunze had a 23.7% target share. DJ Moore had a 16.6% target share. Alamide Zaccheaus, who is no longer on the team, had a 14.2% target share. So that was another guy who was getting a decent amount of targets. He was on pace for 77 targets in those 12 games. Of course, Burden and Loveland weren't doing much. But one thing that I like about Odunze, and he's going to have to score touchdowns because Heath mentioned his catch rate. His catch rate's around 50% each of the first 2 years. He's a high ADOT guy. Also good yak, so that's cool. He's good at yards per catch. He has the ninth most end zone targets per game of any wide receiver over the last 2 years. And the guys ahead of Odunze are Adams, Evans, Marvin Harrison Jr., Deontay Johnson, weird, Justin Jefferson, George Pickens, Jamar Chase, and he's tied with Drake London. Eighth most end zone wide targets per game. That's Caleb's guy, has been Caleb's guy in the end zone. Judkins as your boom.
Yeah, I think we talked about this on a show a couple weeks ago or earlier this week maybe, and just like the 2 second year running backs that are coming back from major injuries and where they're currently being drafted. And Scadaboo's like a round and a half, two rounds ahead of Judkins. I still think Judkins is a better rusher. And I think that this is still going to be a very good defense in Cleveland. And if Todd Monken has, and one of the other reasons I'm a little bit concerned about Harold Fannin, is I think if Todd Monken has a choice in a game and it stays competitive, we're probably going to get at least a 50% rush rate. And they showed last year, they believe you can lean on Quinshon Judkins in the run game. I'm hopeful the offensive line, there's at least reason to hope the offensive line could be a little bit better than it was last year. That's not a guarantee with the changes that they made. And he absolutely has a chance to score 10 plus touchdowns every year.
They added a fullback in Mike Burton. That's a signal that they want to run the ball more. They're going to put a fullback on the field. I think they love what they've done with their offensive line this offseason. And yes, you're right. You can't guarantee that it's going to be better, but it's going to be really hard to be as bad as it was last year between all the injuries and bad play that they had. I think the Browns deserve props for improving their offensive line. And you are right. I think that if it's a close game late, you will see a much closer to 50-50 pass run rate from the Browns versus when they're, you know, down 10 points in the fourth quarter and they just have to let it rip through the air.
I think there's almost no way it can be as bad as it was last year. To your point about the offensive line, if I can share my screen here, Ashton Jeanty only averaged 0.06 yards before contact per rush. That's something that we point towards a lot as like, wow, he really had it tough last year. It's going to be better this year, hopefully under Clint Kubiak with the Linderbaum addition and everything. Should be better for the Raiders, right? 0.06 ranked 115th out of 115 qualifiers dating back to 2012. If you lower the qualification to 150 or more rushes in a season, Judkins ranks dead last out of 250. He averaged 0.4 yards before contact per rush last year. Insane. I did a Beyond the Boxer profile on him, and I'm like, this guy is so good. He really might be the best running back from this class. And I still don't know if it's going to matter. Like, I'm not drafting him anywhere. I hate it.
Oh, wow.
Would you draft him, Jacob?
When would I draft him?
Yeah, what round? Like, I'm okay with him in round four.
Yeah, he reminds me of Tedrow McMillan. So it's like, I don't think it's a bad pick necessarily. I feel a little bit more comfortable with McMillan because he doesn't have the serious injury that he's recovering from. But I think most likely this is a young, dependable stud who you're going to be okay with most weeks, even though the offense is not good. But I do worry a lot about what his realistic ceiling is, which is why I was interested to hear what Heath's case was for him being like the boom player, just because I think the offensive environment is just so limiting. So again, it's kind of like Brees Hall. Really, there's four running backs who stand out as similar, and you could throw Scatterboo into this, but I think his role just as a receiver and a red zone threat is a little bit unique. But there's four running backs who stand out as very similar, where we know or we feel very convicted that they're supremely talented players, but we're very worried about their offense being like the worst in the whole league. And what do you do with them for fantasy? And that's Devon Achane, Jeremiah Love, Brees Hall, and Quinshon Judkins. I have them ranked in that order. But the fact that Judkins is like well below them in terms of cost, I think is relevant, you know, because he really might be near that group in terms of talent level. And if things are just a little bit better in year two, then we could see this 18, 20 touches per game be pretty good for fantasy still, I think.
Yeah. He doesn't really catch passes. Or he didn't last year anyway. Yeah, I think he's a little bit better with Shedeur Sanders. But I don't know, Heath, if you mentioned about Judkins, he has on paper the easiest, well, the Browns have the easiest schedule in the NFL.
Yeah, I felt better about this take before the Myles Garrett trade, even though I think the Browns made a very good trade with the Myles Garrett trade. But before that, I thought, you know, they're probably going to be more competitive than people think they are. Not because the offense is good. It still could be one of the worst offenses. But I think it's more difficult for it to be one of the worst offenses if they stay in games and just give it to Judkins 22 times a game.
All right.
They're just going to keep getting first downs.
Jacob, you are up. Jacob, why don't you start out? Tell us what's coming up on Beyond the Box Score.
Sure. Yeah, thanks. Beyond the Box Score, we've got... Right now, we're really focused on all these player profiles. So we're looking at some of the more polarizing players heading into 2026, whether that's these year two players like Judkins or Harold Fannin Jr., where we don't really know quite what to make of them next year. And we've got some profiles out on them, so you can like binge all this, dig into all this throughout the season if you want, or this draft season if you want, find all that on Beyond the Box Score. Today, Dan Schneier and I are wearing tank tops, and we're going to talk about the most underrated wide receivers. So that's just kind of a for fun show, but we've got a lot of great guests coming on to help us out, get y'all ready for draft season for sure. One of them was Rich Rebar, who just does awesome, awesome work. And I've got some cool stats from Rich that I want to share with you in reference to my first red player here, which is Trey McBride, which I don't like because I think Trey McBride, we talk about talent, like he's one of the most talented players in the league for sure. I've got him at tight end 3. I am drafting Colson Loveland ahead of him. Not that you ever have to make that decision, but I'm quite nervous about McBride. I thought that Heath's points about Sam Laporta potentially outscoring McBride makes a lot of sense. I think that that's totally realistic. I wanted to talk about that. You mentioned the 3 tight end usage and from your conversation with Ryan Heath about like Ladd McConkey being the next Jackson Smith and Jigba and how that personnel package type stuff could benefit him with Mike McDaniel coming over. So it's not that additional tight ends on the field necessarily boosts any specific position. It's more so that just having tight ends or fullbacks, it's really simple, like having tight ends or fullbacks on the field instead of receivers boosts the best players. Not only are those players less likely to draw targets in terms of fullbacks, second and third tight ends and stuff like that, but also those bigger personnel packages are more likely to sell to a defense that a run might be coming. And so the best play callers, the guys who are really using this well, whether that's Sean McVay or Ben Johnson or low-key Drew Petzing, I really think is underrated. If you want to listen to that play callers episode that we just did with Rich Rebar, we talk about Petzing a lot. I think Detroit's offense is going to set the league on fire. Sidebar. Like I think that it's just going to be insane this year. It boosts the best players. I think that's a way to sell the run and then get play action looks, get under center passing, get all this kind of efficiency boosting stuff where you can get your best players in advantageous matchups. And so last year we saw McBride had a ton of production from these personnel packages. Only Puka Nacua had more receptions from three tight end sets than Trey McBride. He had a 33% target per route run rate from those personnel packages. The stat that I think is, that's just a small little thing that I wanted to bring in reference to that conversation y'all had. The stat that's more meaningful, I think, is just the raw number of routes that Trey McBride ran. This is from Rich Rebar. Trey McBride ran 694 routes last year, which is 121 more than the next closest tight end. It's the most routes run by a tight end in the True Media database. The previous high was 623. McBride had 694. The average tight end runs about 32 routes per game per Rich's research. So basically, McBride ran 22 games worth of routes last year, which is just not replicable. Like, all the Arizona stuff is clearly not replicable. Like, but that in particular, like, just the raw volume, it was just busted. That's not, I mean, everyone else is running 17 games worth of routes and he ran 22.
But what if they go to the Super Bowl?
Yeah, maybe they will. So like Heath brought up like the per route stuff for McBride really doesn't look that special last year. And that's just true. Like, and it makes sense. And an offense that's not that good, not that efficient overall, you aren't going to be able to produce elite efficiency most of the time. And so if the total volume number comes down and he doesn't somehow increase that efficiency in a big way, which I don't think that he's that type of a player, because the tight ends who typically get to elite efficiency that aren't able to do it, like, because of their team, are guys who are winning down the field or creating tons of yards after the catch. McBride doesn't necessarily do either of those things. He's more of an accumulator. He gets a lot of short targets. And so I'm pretty nervous about what it's going to look like this year. And I think there are clear paths to more upside with some of the other tight ends around him. Even though we might be a little bit safer than somebody like Colson Loveland or Sam Laporta, I could see either of those guys outscoring him easily.
All right, we got to take a break here. So Red, White, and Boom for Jacob. Red is Trey McBride. White and Boom, we'll find out after this on FFT.
All righty. My white is Kenneth Walker. And I'm really curious to get your guys' take on this. So I went with some early round players. I haven't got a chance to talk about Walker much this offseason. But if you do want to watch a profile, he's one of the first ones that we did, one of these individual profiles way back in the free agency period, was Kenneth Walker. The obvious appeal with Walker is explosive plays. And that's really come through in an impressive way. So he ranks running back 23 in explosive plays per game through an initial four seasons dating back to 2000, which puts him in a range with some really, really good players, like just ahead of Sean Alexander, Brian Westbrook. And that's while splitting a backfield for a lot of that time. We know how good the explosive play potential is and could be in this Kansas City backfield where teams play the pass. That's how it's been for a long time. What I want to talk about is, can he potentially increase like the consistency? And I'm really curious to get Heath's perspective on this specifically as a Chiefs fan. So I'm tying this to Eric Bieniemy. And so if you look at, I dug into all this in this player profile, if you want to get all the specific information, the golden era of like the Andy Reid run game came under Eric Bieniemy. And specifically, they had this 2021 team that was insanely efficient. It was a 54% success rate, which is the third highest mark of any team over the past five seasons on running back runs. And 70% of the runs gained positive yards before initial contact. The league average last year was 55%. 70% is the highest of any team during the time I have that data available, dating back to 2017. Heath, do you remember who the running backs were in the 2021 Kansas City Chiefs backfield?
Oh, man. I wish that you hadn't. You should have asked me that like one sentence earlier, because I actually, while you were talking, was like, well, who was the 21 Chiefs running back? And I had already pulled it up.
Daryl Williams, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and Derek Gore Jr. are the running backs you're not remembering from this 54% wow success rate team. I really think Bieniemy is good at this specifically. Another area I would point to is DeAndre Swift's transformation last year. So Next Gen Stats has some interesting ways to contextualize what's happening in the running back position. One of those stats is the efficiency of movement. So like the amount of space that's covered. It's basically, are they getting vertical? The amount of space that's covered to get yards, basically. And Swift was the third least efficient in this metric in 2024. And then in 2025, he was well above the league average in this metric. So huge change there. Another set they have is yards over expectation. And Swift was dead last in the percentage of his runs that gained positive yards over expectation in 2024. And then in 2025, he was first in the league. And that's really unusual for him. He's kind of been like a Kenneth Walker type where he's like more boom bust. And then last year we saw him be like Mr. Consistent. And I think a lot of people would just say, well, yeah, Ben Johnson. Ben Johnson does the run installs. We've seen him with Ben Johnson before. You know, this is the first time we ever saw him with Bienemy, and he looked completely different. And so I'm wondering, like, what could Bienemy do for Kenneth Walker, who's been one of the most effective running backs in the NFL when given at least 1 yard before contact? 6.5 yards per rush last year when given at least 1 yard before contact. Only Devon Achane had a higher explosive run rate on these runs where there was at least 1 yard before initial contact with the defender. The Chiefs have been very good at creating these types of runs. And I think that has something to do with the way defenses play them, but also there's a lot of talent on that offensive line. So I'm really excited for Walker. And I want to hear Heath's thoughts on Eric Bieniemy and then all of you if this tracks.
No, I think the stuff you brought about Swift and improving that is really applicable, because you're right. They have, early in his career, Swift was more of a Kenneth Walker style home run or 2 yard loss. And so I think he could have that same type of positive impact on Ken Walker, and he could get more consistent as a rusher and could have a very effective season. I think my two questions don't have much to do with the rushing. It's what's his role in the passing game to be, because I don't think Eric Bieniemy, when he was there in the past, the Chiefs really threw to the running back a lot. And I don't think Walker's probably going to be the third down or 2 minute drill running back. And then I don't think anybody's taking red zone rush attempts from him in terms of a running back. But do the Chiefs continue to do all the Patrick Mahomes stuff they've historically done in the red zone, which really limits those carries inside the 10-yard line for their lead running back? But I think the stuff you brought up on Bieniemy is really good and makes me more optimistic about him as a rusher.
I think it's worth pointing out that Swift, year one with the Bears, had a really bad offensive line, and then in that offseason, they went out and massively upgraded. And I think the Seahawks offensive line did well last year and stayed healthy. But it's just, you already mentioned it, the Chiefs, especially on the interior, are really good. This is such a great setup. I mean, Jamie has him eighth at running back. So Heath and Dave are more like 12 and 13, I think. But
what is his Fantasy Pros ADP?
RB 10, 16th overall, RB 10.
So right in the middle of where we all, you have him 10th, Jacob?
He's my white player. Yeah, I've got him at running back 11. I've got him behind Henry and Achane. I think I might move him ahead of Achane potentially. But yeah, that's why I wanted to bring this up, is because like I've got all these reasons to think that he could be this boom player. But for the reasons Heath brought up with the role, uncertainty, transitioning over to a new team. And also like, he's got to prove it. I think that he could do this stuff. I think Bieniemy can help him. But at the same time, he ranks freaking 51st in rush success rate among running backs since entering the NFL out of 54 qualifiers. And a lot of that has to do with the offensive line and stuff. But Zach Charbonnet ranks in the top 20, playing behind the same offensive line. Like, a lot of that is Kenneth Walker. I love the guy to death. All the advanced stats in terms of voided tackles and stuff are fun. But like, he's got to be consistent.
Let me ask you a question. We're talking about success rate. Define success rate. And then, you know, isn't it possible that Charbonnet can be a more consistent runner, have more higher success rate, but Kenneth Walker is the guy who can break off the 50-yard run, and he can do that twice a year. He can have four runs of 30 yards or more, or something like that. And even though on a carry-by-carry basis, it's frustrating, the success rate might not reflect it, but the production could still be there because he has that elite speed.
For sure, but I do think we've seen him lose touches throughout his NFL career, and I think that this could have something to do with it, is that he might be a frustrating player for coaches a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, success rate is on first or second down if a player gains half of the yardage required to first down. So if it's second and eight, if they gain four or more yards, that's a success. On third or fourth down, if they gain a first down, that's a success. And yeah, there are completely different types of players. The explosives from Walker definitely make him worth getting on the field. But Charbonnet, I went into this on the Kenneth Walker breakdown on that video. Charbonnet was one of the few running backs in the league last year who, if you look at their runs where they were hit at or behind the line of scrimmage, he actually gained positive yards, and Walker did not. So it's like Jonathan Taylor, Bijan Robinson. There's a very few of these running backs who are able to do it, and Charbonnet was one of them. He's very, very good at that.
Okay. All right. Boom! Who's your boom player? And I agree with it 100%. It's a great call. Good job. And by the way, I think you were the most critical of me when I took AJ Brown like 16th overall or something like that in a recent draft.
I think that might be you being a little sensitive and taking that personally, because I didn't say anything critical. I said, wow. I was just surprised. I thought it was cool.
Okay.
AJ Brown is my boom. And yes, since Adam Azer took him in the first round, I have been rapidly approaching that level of enthusiasm.
No, but I didn't take him in the first round. I took
him at the 1-2 turn.
Not quite. Let me see. I think I got the June 2026.
I feel like it was like a top 16.
I took
16
him in fifth pick. So that's 13, 14, 15, 17th overall.
Okay. Yeah. I'm there. I think I'm considering moving AJ Brown ahead of Drake London. I'm considering moving him ahead of Justin Jefferson, Nico Collins for sure. I think like that's where I'm approaching with AJ Brown. I think there's tons of reasons to be optimistic. And I'm going to try not to just ramble for 10 minutes here. If at any point you want to get into this conversation, please do. Cause I have there's a lot to think about with AJ Brown, but really it could just be as simple as like AJ Brown's really good. Drake May's really good. Josh McDaniels is good at what he does. This could be awesome. So AJ Brown isn't going to like find himself in who's this year's Jackson Smith and Jigba discussions. Cause he's not an early career receiver, but he really does fit like the exact criteria that Ryan Heath laid out with Ladd McConkey when he came on your guys' show and talked about McConkey as this year's JSN. He leaves a heavy three receiver set and heavy shotgun style offense to play with the Patriots, which are one of 10 teams with a sub 50% rate of three receiver sets in 2025. New England ranked eighth in under center dropbacks and ninth in under center play action dropbacks. I'm focused on under center dropbacks because they are efficiency boosting plays. And AJ Brown is just 1 year removed from averaging 3 yards per out run in a shotgun heavy offense. And so like, if you split it out and I did an episode with Ben Gretsch on this, if you want to check out the former CBS legend, Ben Gretsch and I just getting super, super nerdy and deep into the weeds on per route data. All of this personnel stuff really, really affects it. And some of these players get boosted in a significant way by playing in more, you know, big personnel, under center, play action heavy offenses. That's what we saw early in AJ Brown's career in Tennessee. In Philadelphia, it wasn't really the case. And still, he averaged over 3 yards per out run just 1 year ago. He's one of 9 receivers with a single season yard per out run rate above 3 during the time that I have that data available. That's 2019 till 2025. And that was with the Eagles just 1 year ago. I think people like don't remember how good that season was, I guess. And are like nervous that he's dropped off, but like, I don't know, man. He's wide receiver 3 in yards per out run during his time in the NFL, behind only Puka Nacua and Tyreek Hill, and he's wide receiver 1 from under center specifically. Again, he didn't get very many of those opportunities with the Eagles, but 4.4 yards per out run from under center throughout his career. Puka Nacua is next at 4.3, and then there's a massive drop off to Nico Collins at 3.7. I really think AJ Brown might be just one of the best players in the league, and we don't really know it because he's always been in low volume offenses. So I want to dig a little bit deeper with the per route data. I want to talk about Stephon Diggs. Diggs last year
This is what I said the day after that draft. I came on the show and Heath wasn't on the show. But you know, I know you can make the argument they really spread the ball out in New England, but they didn't when Stephon Diggs was on the field. He just wasn't on the field that much, but he got a ton of targets. So his target per out run rate was like top 8. He was top 10 in almost every like valuable metric, basically. Stephon Diggs was...
Pretty much top 10 in all of the per opportunity basis metrics.
My fault. He was 20th in target per out run rate, 24.4%. But the other stuff, yards per out run, first down rate, he was really high. Okay, go ahead.
And when he got to be on the field in a full-time role, it didn't drop off at all. So sometimes like Keenan Allen, for example, they get this really high per route production, but that's because they're coming on to do specific stuff and they're targeted on those plays. Diggs just was in a part-time role, I think, because he's old. So he was wide receiver 10 in fantasy points per run in this New England offense last year. And that was with only 4 touchdowns and still was wide receiver 10 in fantasy points per run. He had 1,000 yards in this part-time role, 68% route share for Stephon Diggs last year and still 1,000 yards. On a per opportunity basis, he was top 10. I think AJ Brown is better than Stephon Diggs. And I think he's going to play more and I think he's going to score more. So Diggs had a 19% red zone share and only 8% of the end zone targets for the Patriots last year. He played 17 games. He had 8% of the end zone targets. AJ Brown has a freaking 34% career rate when it comes to like end zone targets in games that he's played. That rate has never been below 21% in a season. That was his rookie season when it was 21%. His red zone target shares as a member of the Eagles have been 24%, 27%, 31%, 34%. Diggs' rate was 19. I think AJ Brown is an alpha in a way that Diggs isn't really. And he has like no target competition on this team. Like, what's really crazy about the Eagles' rates and how high they are, which is basically like league high numbers, is he's playing alongside Devontae Smith, who I think pretty much all of us agree is like a top, at worst, like a top 15 wide receiver talent in the league, like a legitimate, like potential wide receiver one type of talent. And still, AJ Brown is completely dominating all these target shares. And now he goes to the Patriots and it's like, who, Romeo Doubs? Like, Romeo Doubs is a good player. He was an important, reliable player for the Packers. He topped out at 21% in terms of target per route run rate across his four seasons with the Packers. It was always between 19 and 21%. I think we know who he is. Doubs is a competent X receiver who can work down the field and open things up for the better catch and run players. We've seen Jayden Reed, Tucker Kraft, Christian Watson, all of those guys put up really good numbers on a per opportunity basis because I do think they benefit from playing alongside him. He's an ideal wide receiver team where he's just good enough to get the defense's respect, not good enough to make his quarterback lock in on him. I think we know who the quarterback's going to be locked in on as long as he can stay healthy. It's AJ Brown, clearly. And so the last thing I would throw in here is I did an episode with Ryan Heath recently on Beyond the Box Score where we talked about which stats matter in terms of predicting future fantasy scoring. Ryan digs into all of the previous year's data and then how strongly it correlated to the next year's fantasy points. And some really interesting things stood out to me in doing that exercise, first of which was that first read target rate correlates more strongly with future fantasy point production than actual target rate. The next two are both about first downs. First down per route run rate correlates more strongly than yard per route run rate. And I think yard per route run rate is generally thought of as like the best receiver stat or one of the best receiver stats. Just total first downs correlates more strongly than fantasy points per game. And Heath definitely knows this from doing projections and stuff. Like you pretty much can't beat fantasy points per game. Like if you just look at last year's fantasy points per game, that's pretty instructive. You're probably going to do a really good job of just like predicting what's going to happen the next year for the most part. Just getting first downs, total first downs correlated more strongly. And if you look at AJ Brown, he's been one of the absolute best in the league at creating first downs during his time in the league. And then he also has these massive first read target shares, again, playing with Devontae Smith. He had a 42% first read target rate in 2024, which was just behind Malik Nabers, who was on a Giants team that had no one else. It was Nabers at 42.8%, AJB at 42.1%. The next highest was Drake London at 35%. Even last year, he was seventh in the league, higher than Trey McBride, higher than Chris Olave, higher than Zay Flowers, who are guys who were clearly the top option in their offense. And AJ Brown had a 35% first read target rate while playing alongside Devontae Smith. So we're 1 year removed from wide receiver one in the whole league types of rates from AJ Brown. And now he gets to play with less target competition than ever before, with by far the best passer he's ever played with in a high scoring and pass heavy offense. Like, unless he's total dust or gets hurt, I think he easily is a strong bet to lead the wide receiver position in scoring.
Mm. I don't know about leading the position in scoring, but I'm very comfortable with where I drafted him. And you think taking him over Jefferson is pretty interesting. Definitely could see it. Heath, you've been sort of cautious with AJ Brown. Any changes? You're muted.
No, I have been cautious. I think I've got him in round three now. I hope he's still AJ Brown. I think all the things about Jacob talking about how good AJ Brown was, and I do think you have to say was, because he wasn't last year. It's just like you hope that he's still the same guy and that the knee is okay. It's kind of, I was thinking about how he's kind of Mike Evans adjacent. He's 4 years younger, so it's not the same argument, but it's older wide receiver who has some injury questions going to a new team that has not recently been very high in wide receiver targets. Now, there's differences too. Brown's better than Mike Evans, and Brown's younger than Mike Evans. I do worry about the knee and worry about the health and worry if he's still quite the same guy.
And I mean, yeah, just hold on, because I think AJ, you're right in one sense. Like, there was a report, for what it's worth, a report by Jeff McLean of the Philadelphia Inquirer said the Rams were interested in AJ Brown, but they were not satisfied with his medicals. And he also said, McLean said that the knee was part of the reason the Eagles didn't get more for AJ Brown, because people, he went for a 2027 fifth round pick and a 2028 first round pick. And people thought that was underpaying or a good value for AJ Brown. So I think that's really important to note that he might have a knee issue here. All right, let's move on to me. Yay. Red, white, and boom. Red has pumped the brakes, going a little too early. White is perfect draft value. And boom is going to exceed that draft value and maybe win you your league. All right, Red, Caleb Williams. He is QB6, 72nd overall. I love Caleb Williams. I really want to get Caleb Williams. Going into the offseason, I thought, this is a guy I'm going to target. Maybe he'll be somewhere around 90th overall, something like that. Nope. He's QB6, and he's 72nd overall. He's 23 picks ahead of Brock Purdy. Brock Purdy has finished as a top six quarterback in two of his last three seasons on a per-game basis. He's 24 picks ahead of Matthew Stafford. Matthew Stafford won the MVP last year and was, I think, QB2 per game, right up there. He's 24 picks also ahead of Patrick Mahomes and Jackson Dart. So I love Caleb Williams. He could be better than all of them. I would rank him ahead of all of them. I'm not willing to take him two rounds earlier than all of those guys. You know, that would be Purdy, Stafford, Mahomes, Dart. Not to mention Trevor Lawrence is in that mix. There's just such good quarterback value that I think, while I do like Caleb a lot, I don't think he should be basically in his own tier ahead of all those other guys. White, so the right ADP is T. Higgins, 38th overall, wide receiver 19. This is where he's finished on a per-game basis in his last five seasons, beginning with 2025 and working backwards. 16th per game, 5th per game, 42nd per game, 13th per game, and 13th per game. One bad year in 2023 when Joe Burrow was hurt, and Joe Burrow was kind of bad. Other than that, he's been top 16 per game. T. Higgins is going as wide receiver 19 right now. It's perfect. I don't think he has huge upside unless that target per out run rate comes back up to where it was in 2024. That seems a little unlikely, but I think he's a really safe pick in round three. And boom! Josh Downs, 97th overall, wide receiver 44 in ADP. He ran more than 80% of the routes in three games last year, and honestly, he didn't do that well. But Daniel Jones was not the quarterback for any of those games. The year before, he ran 78% or more of the routes in six games. He scored 19.5, 22.2, 19.4, 6.2, 15.1, and 19.4. That is 19.4 or more PPR fantasy points in four of six games in which he ran 78% or more of the routes in 2024. They talked about moving Josh Downs outside more. Got to get him on the field. Obviously, they lose Pittman. I am concerned about Daniel Jones. I am concerned about the offense, but this is the value pick here. Of the three wide receiver slash tight ends on this team, wide receiver 44, 97th overall for Josh Downs. If you want to be a little cautious and get a piece of the Colts offense, which was number one in the league last year when Jones was healthy, this is the guy to get, really good on a per route basis. And I watched more film last night, every time I watched Josh Downs, I am amazed at how he just destroys cornerbacks, gets open, makes people look stupid, and he will have his best year. And I think, you know, boom is a little crazy. I don't think he's going to win you your league, but I think he could be somewhere around wide receiver 24. Okay. Red, Caleb Williams, white, T. Higgins, boom, Josh Downs. Any disagreements here?
I like Caleb Williams this year. I think your reasoning is fine, though. Like, there's a lot to like at quarterback.
I love Caleb Williams.
He could be amazing, but it's about that time of year where I start doing the somebody had a good tweet, and I can't remember who it was, so I'm not going to give him credit. But it was basically talking about how the top five quarterbacks are cheaper than they've ever been, and guys in the Caleb Williams range are more expensive than they've ever been. Like, we just kind of smushed QB together. And I think that kind of makes sense, because you get to a certain point in the draft where, like, do I take a guy who I know is the starting quarterback, or do I take maybe Josh Downs? And most people are going to choose Caleb Williams and the starting quarterbacks over him. But they also don't want to draft a quarterback in round two, so that the elite guys have fallen down. I think it's hard for me to justify Caleb's ADP, but it is also a pretty easy fix. He just has to learn how to throw the ball where he wants it to go.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. I'm really excited for him. But yeah, he's
not phenomenally accurate.
No, he's one of the lead. JJ McCarthy's the only quarterback who had a lower completion percentage than Caleb Williams. Also, he runs a lot, but he doesn't run a lot near the goal line. So he's not scoring a ton of rushing touchdowns. Caleb Williams has 3 goal line carries in his career.
Also, I think like probably more important than my reaction to those names was Dan's reaction to your soccer rant in the chat.
Well, he's wrong, first of all.
Right.
Dan saying, note for Adam, while I was heated and ready to rant because of the red card, it's an example of Adam and me, Dan, not knowing soccer. Apparently, regardless of intent, it's always a red. Cleats up. Well, I was reading an article, I think from The Athletic this morning, that said there was a little bit of discretion there that they could have, like they took away a red card from Messi earlier in the tournament. So I don't think it's, but my further point was, if that play is what gets you a red card, and a red card gets you disqualified, you can't be replaced, and you're suspended for at least one match, then red cards are stupid! And we need to do something about red cards and how stupid they are. Dan is stupid, too, because he also is already talking smack about tennis. We're a month and a half away from our match. I'll be getting waxed this year, according to Dan. I have not closed the gap at all. The gap is getting wider. How is the gap getting wider when you never play and I play? 6-0, 6-0, 6-2 is what he's predicting. That will not be the case. I feel pretty decent about it, but we'll see. You know, you're lucky that I'm injured, Dan Schneier. Also, I hope all of you will watch the match. We're going to stream it. It's going to be fun. We're going to raise a lot of money. I think we should play some doubles with Jamie and Heath personally and make Dave the ball boy, but we'll figure out creative ways to raise some money for St. Jude.
I'd love to do that.
It's July. I should mention Draftathon is coming up. FFT Open is coming up. We're expanding from 24th. We've gone from 8 to 12 to 24 to now 36 leagues in the FFT Open. That means if we sell out all of our spots, we're going to raise $99,000 for St. Jude. It's unbelievable. The best thing we do is this draftathon. So more info on that. That'll be like probably 3-ish weeks away where we start putting those spots up, maybe a little bit later than that. But if you want to be in the FFT Open, you have plenty of opportunities, 36 leagues. And all goes to St. Jude. Thanks to Jacob Gibbs for coming on. Watch Beyond the Box Score. Thanks to Heath Cummings for coming on. Watch FFT Dynasty. Thanks for Dave Richard for coming on. Thanks to Dave Richard for coming on. Watch FFT Express in 5 minutes, as Dave and I are going to be recording that. And everybody have an awesome 4th. USA all the way. See you later.
Podcasts. Criminal Minds Evolution is back on Paramount Plus.
Do you think it's possible to discern some hidden pattern shared by all serial killers?
With a new killer each week.
I see those wheels turning.
When a copycat killer emerges, the BAU will form a dark alliance with a familiar foe.
Elias, would you help us?
This season, evil is contagious.
Once it starts, it can't be stopped.
Criminal Minds Evolution. New season now streaming on Paramount+.